Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns. Brought to you by Regency at Hualalai, a retirement and assisted living community. Listen Sundays at 6:30 a.m. on KKOA 107.7 FM or at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM. Or to the podcast at lava1053.com or koacountry1077.com. Now here's your host and producer, Sherry Brackett.
Aloha, good Sunday morning. Welcome to Island Issues. Over the years, we've interviewed many scientists, astronomers, physicists, geophysicists, chemists, and I honestly have not thought much about the gender of the scientists we've interviewed. We've often had Doug Simons from Canada-France-Hawaii Telescope, Jim Kuahikawa and Frank Truesdell, and Jeff Sutton from Hawaiian Volcano Observatory, along with several other male scientists. And we've had a good number of women scientists, ranging from Dr. Susan Solomon, an atmospheric chemist who was one of the first to theorize that the hole in the ozone was caused by chlorofluorocarbons, and she actually won a Nobel Prize as part of her work heading the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. I've frequently interviewed Tina Neal, scientist in charge at Hawaiian Volcano Observatory, and many other HVO scientists, geologist Janet Babb, research geophysicist Ingrid Johansson, Tamar Elias, who's a geochemist. But the fact is, there are not that many women in science, and it turns out, especially not in the observatories here on the island, and that's part of our topic today. Jessica Dempsey is the deputy director of the James Clerk Maxwell Telescope here on the Big Island. She grew up in the northernmost part of Australia, Darwin, and then out on a remote cattle station in the Northern Territory. Her aspiration when young was to be the next Cate Blanchett, and she originally studied theater and film in Sydney, while also doing a science degree to, as she said, comfort her mother, who was sure she would end up a penniless actor. Now, while she was studying physics, she had a chance encounter that inspired her, but I'm going to let her tell you about that specific situation. Her degree is in astrophysics, and a year later, after getting her degree, she was the first Australian woman scientist to work at the Edmundson Scott Antarctic Base at the geographic South Pole. She's been in Hawaii since 2007 as the instrument scientist for the James Clerk Maxwell Telescope, and as I mentioned, she's now the deputy director. And we're going to talk to Jessica about some of her own thoughts about women in science. Good morning. Aloha, Jessica.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I'm delighted to have you. And, you know, since we want to talk about women going into science, I thought it would be a great idea to include a younger woman and a student who is planning to go into science. Mailani Neal was born and raised in Kona, went to high school at Kamehameha Schools and Hawaii Preparatory Academy. She's now in her fourth year studying applied physics with a concentration in astronomical instrumentation at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, also called RPI, in Troy, New York. Good morning. Aloha, Mailani.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
What's your next step, Mailani? If you're in your fourth year, that should mean that you're graduating. At least I think your parents would hope so from the money standpoint. But what's next for you?
Yes, I will be graduating after this semester, and right now I'm looking at some options for grad school as well as looking at jobs.
Well, you mentioned when you sent me your bio that your concentration is in astronomical instrumentation. What does that really mean?
So, with my experience over the summers of working at JCMT, I realized that I really liked the balance of being in the office as well as being out in the field getting some hands-on work done, and that's why I think instrumentation is a great field for me to go into. It's designing, building, and maintaining instruments on things like telescopes and across many other fields too, such as climate studies, and it's very focused on optimizing what we can do.
Jessica Dempsey, tell us what got you motivated to give up theater and film and focus on astrophysics.
Oh, absolutely. I was in a physics lab one day. I think I was in my third year. And I had this lab professor named Professor Barnes. I'm happy to name and shame him.
And where were you? At what school?
I was at University of New South Wales in Sydney, Australia. And I just very innocently went up to him to ask him a question about the lab. And he ignored the question entirely and actually reached over and physically patted me on the top of my head and said, "Don't worry about it. It's just the reason you don't understand is women really just don't have the brains or a cutout for science, and it's not your fault." And I was just absolutely stunned into silence. And I remember I just walked away. I didn't say anything. I just had nothing to come back with. I just couldn't really believe it had happened.
Well, what can you say? I mean, it's such an amazingly ignorant comment.
It was extraordinary. And so after I went back and processed that, I sort of put everything in balance. And actually now to this day, I think it is the single most inspiring thing anyone has ever said to me. Because if you want, really, I'm sort of a, you know, up is down, black is white, contrary kind of person. And so you tell me I can't do something, that's actually pretty much the most motivational thing you can say to me. And so I finished my theatre and film degree, jumped straight over feet first into the rest of the science degree. And as you mentioned, a year later, I was in Antarctica. And that was just an opportunity I couldn't pass up. And similar to Mailani, you know, the instrument science for me was what was interesting, and being able to build this stuff and put your hands on real instruments. I mean, that was why I did it.
What did you do at the South Pole? Tell us about that experience.
Well, it was extraordinary. I'd never seen snow before I went down there, proper Australian girl. And so the weather and the shock of the temperatures, I think in the summer at South Pole, it's sort of averaged between minus 20 and minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit. And then in the winter, it gets down to as cold as minus 100 Fahrenheit. Because being at the geographic pole, the sun sets in April and it doesn't come back till October. And so you have 6 months of darkness as well. So I did 5 summers. I built a robotic telescope for my PhD. And then after I graduated, I got invited to come and winter for a full year with Berkeley and maintaining and running their cosmic microwave background experiment telescope down there.
You know, it's interesting that both of you have mentioned instrumentation, and I suspect, Mailani, that you've been a little bit influenced by Jessica because you've worked with her at James Clerk Maxwell Telescope. But it also points out that there's lots of different kinds of work that goes on to make astronomy happen. It's not just the scientists who are looking at the stars and making observations. Somebody has to make all that work.
That's right. And in fact, you know, the scientists that are only a small portion of what makes up most of the observatories. And you have engineers and technical specialists. And critically, you know, we have the people who actually are the nuts and bolts of running the administration. We have computer graphics designers, computer software people. And so there's a huge array of fields that we want to see people focus on to support the observatory work.
What does James Clerk Maxwell Telescope do? There are several telescopes on Mauna Kea, and so tell us about yours and what makes it different from the others.
James Clerk Maxwell Telescope has been operational for about 30 years on Mauna Kea. It's the biggest telescope on the mountain.
Really? Now, see, yes. I thought Keck was the biggest.
No, size matters, and mine is the biggest. And so it's actually got a 45-foot diameter primary mirror. And it's not a single mirror. It's actually made up of 276 different panels. But the really big difference is we actually look at an entirely different wavelength of light than the telescopes you might have heard more about, like Keck and CFHT, which look at optical light the same that our eyes can collect and see. So we look at light which is less than 1 millimeter in wavelength, but it's still about 1,000 times bigger than the wavelengths in the optical regime. And the cool thing about this is that we see the universe entirely differently. And submillimeter radiation is emitted from things which don't emit optical light, so it's invisible to these other telescopes. We're looking at baby planets which are forming around baby stars before they even turn on and start emitting that bright, hot light. The cosmic microwave background, so the afterglow of the Big Bang, that was discovered in this millimeter-submillimeter regime. So you are looking at the invisible and the coldest processes in the universe when you look at submillimeter light. And it just turns out that it's very, very hard to look at this light from the ground. There are only 3 places in the whole world where you can actually put a telescope and any of this light reaches you. And so we have Mauna Kea, we have the high Andes in Chile, and Antarctica. And so those are the only 3 places where you can actually collect this radiation and look at the universe like this.
Why is that knowledge important? You know, I'm not a scientist, so why do I care about this?
So the interesting thing about looking in every different wavelength, I think of it like in cultural studies. Like, you can't just look and assume that you know everything about humans from looking at one tiny little population. You have to look at a bunch of different ones. The same way we look at one particular object, looking at it at different parts of the spectrum tells you so many more things about it. And you need to look in our form of light. For example, if you've heard about some of the discoveries of water out in the universe, we've discovered amino acids, which are the building blocks of life. We found beer. Which was exciting.
Beer?
Alcohol. We've actually found alcohol in space.
That should encourage people to become astronauts, if nothing else.
And so if you ever hear about chemistry, when we found all these chemicals, it's been found with one of these submillimeter and millimeter telescopes. Because we look at the cold gas and dust that shroud and surround a lot of the stars.
Mailani, you grew up in Kona. Tell us what inspired you to want to go into science? Because clearly you had that aspiration from a fairly early age. So how did that come about?
So specifically for my interest in astronomy, it actually came about because my fourth grade science teacher, Mrs. Hale, at Holoaloa Elementary was teaching us about Hawaiian voyaging. And one of the activities that she had us do was that we had to go outside once a month and draw where a couple of constellations were and see how it shifted throughout the year. And that was the moment I knew that I wanted to go into astronomy. Then being able to learn about how the Hawaiians used the stars to navigate, they also used it for things like agriculture. It really made me feel like I could be both a scientist as well as a cultural practitioner in my way.
Interesting. So you went to Halu'aloha school. At what point did you go to Kamehameha schools on Oahu?
I left when I was in seventh grade to go to boarding school on Oahu, and I was always just a Big Island girl. I had a hard time on Oahu with all the city, and you can't see the lights too well. You can't see the stars too well because of all the lights. So I always knew I needed to come back to Big Island.
And so you did transfer back to Hawaii Preparatory Academy. Because of that, because the big city was too much for you, or were there other reasons?
Yeah, I wanted to come home, and a big reason was that this was my senior year in high school, and I knew I was going to be studying physics and astronomy. And my dad thought it would be a really great idea for me to come home and be in Waimea, which is close to KEK and CFHT's headquarters, to be able to be connected with the astronomy community. And I had a few classmates whose parents are working at the telescope, so I was able to meet them and kind of get some perspective on what it takes to be an astronomer and to be here.
Well, obviously it took, because you're still pursuing your studies towards that end goal. Why is it, and I'll ask both of you, why is it that we think that more women do not go into science?
You know what's interesting, and if you look some at the numbers, in high school, in middle school, the girls are committed and as interested in science as boys. And so by the time you get to college, there are a little bit lower entrance rates into the science and STEM field, science, technology, engineering, mathematics. But the further you step along, the greater that attrition rate of women and girls becomes, until by the time you're at faculty level science positions in the United States, you're at less than 4%.
Really? That's a stunning drop-off that you're talking about, if in middle school girls and boys are sort of equally interested in the field.
That's right. And that's what I'm, you know, very interested in talking about and correcting. And there's been a lot of studies done on it. And it's no big one cliff that everyone falls off, but there's a steady attrition rate at every single transition point. And that's the one that I'm looking at those gaps to close. How can we stop losing those numbers of girls? Where are the holes and how do we fill them in?
Do you think it's what Professor Barnes told you, that females are just not equipped with the brain power to do science?
Oh, if Professor Barnes was here right now. No, I mean, that's one of the most amazing things. And, you know, Mailani's an example. We see the girls and women we see, like, committing and in the science. We need them in observatories. We need them in the STEM fields. They approach ideas and problem solving differently. They add, and the balance in gender in these sorts of problem solving groups has been shown to actually make you solve things better, faster, more efficiently, differently.
And why is that? Tell me how it would be different if it was a bunch of guy scientists we had here versus a mixture of male and female scientists.
Women are more collaborative in general, and I am still making sort of generalizations here. But in general, that's true. Women tend to offer a whole bunch more options And an interesting example, not quite in engineering, but actually down at South Pole, they would try and deliberately hire women to run the big machinery down there. And that was because what they had found was, one, they were gentler on the controls and they broke less stuff. And secondly, they would take a bit more time to think about where to put this big digger and dig into the snow before they did it. And so because they thought through the process a bit more, they tended to make less big mistakes. Now, that's just one particular example where in normally male-dominated field, they'd shown that, you know, women could definitely have some advantages too. And I see that all the time in some of our problem-solving that we have to deal with at observatories. That balance and different points of view always improves things.
And just a real short interruption to remind you that this is Island Issues, and I'm your host and producer, Sherry Bracken. Island Issues is on the radio on the Big Island every Sunday morning at 6:30 a.m. on Koa Country, 107.7 FM, and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM, and then posted as a podcast for anytime listening at lava1053.com and at koacountry1077.com. Click on Island Issues and then on the Island Issues microphone. Today we're talking about women in astronomy and astronomy on the top of Mauna Kea with Jessica Dempsey. She's the deputy director of the East Asian Observatory, which we'll hear more about in a little bit, and with Mailani Neal, a senior at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in New York, which, by the way, is an excellent school. My husband got his physics degree there and then went on to get his PhD and work as a physicist. But I digress. Mailani was born and raised in Kona. She is getting her physics degree and then plans to come back and work on the mountain after getting her PhD. And we're talking a bit about how to get more girls interested in science and astronomy. Let's get back to the discussion. Mailani, tell us about your experience. I mean, you decided early on you wanted to go into science. What did you see among your peers at Kamehameha Schools and at Hawaii Preparatory Academy? Were other girls interested in math or science careers? Were you sort of a solo practitioner out there? Tell us about all that.
No, luckily I've made a lot of female friends along the way, mostly because I have been in honors and AP classes. But it really did just drop off once I went to college. A lot of those friends, they went into other fields, of course, that are super interesting. But I think that possibly what the greatest solution to why are there not more girls majoring in science fields is making the foundation of the enthusiasm that I had when I was younger to go into astronomy. And that's what has really been carrying me throughout all of my college years. It's been hard. And yeah, it does seem like the guys do better than me. But at the end of the day, I know I'm there and I deserve to be there and I want to be there. That's, I think, our biggest key to solving this gender balance issue.
Well, clearly you had parental support as well, and I imagine that's pretty important. You know, one thing I've heard is that single gender education, where women are in all-female high schools, for example, encourages women to be out there more. Is that something that you think is a factor, girls and boys mixed together in high school where the boys may tend to dominate?
I went to an all-girls school all the way through to my high school, so I have to say that, you know, I can't compare. I definitely think that helped me. I think peer-to-peer pressure is one of the issues, but they've actually shown that girls start developing the impression that girls are bad at math, this sort of concept, in middle school. That is where these sorts of rhetorics start. And they're echoed by hearing it from their peers, they're hearing it from boys, they're hearing it from other girls. They're also hearing it from a teacher and parent level, which is quite interesting. So where do you start to change and fix that? Yes, we have to start there. And we have to start the confidence building and reminding. We need to be teaching, and the really key thing here is we need to be teaching girls and boys. And it should be that the boys are also having to learn at the same time that girls don't have to be put into a particular box. And girls don't need to put themselves in that box either. And so keeping that confidence level going through high school and then into that college year, yeah, it's a very, very critical time.
I'm wondering how much of this could be attributed to perhaps the parents themselves not being as comfortable with math or science. I mean, you can help your child in homework if it's English pretty easily, I would think. But is that a factor, do you think?
I'm sure it is. I think one of the things that we've been doing, there's initiatives in all sorts of directions here on the Big Island, which I'm really excited about. One of the ones we've just started is Mauna Kea Wonders Teacher Workshop. And you notice Mailani mentioned a teacher. For me, I think nearly everyone who's ended up in a field that they're passionate about had support at an educational level from a teacher at some point. And so one of the things we want to be able to do is provide educational capabilities for teachers on the Big Island to be able to have more resources for STEM training. You know, at the observatories have the experience themselves, so we actually do those courses every year to give the teachers more structure and ability to actually pass that on to the students.
Which I think is really great. And just to remind everybody, STEM is science, technology, engineering, math, and some places add an A to it for arts, and there's various variations. But I do know, and having talked to Doug Simons, who's very bullish on all the opportunities that come out of the Mauna Kea Observatory program, that teaching the teachers is a huge part of this. Teachers in this state are not always supported fully in additional educational opportunities, and that's great that that's being offered here on the island. Tell us about some other things that can be done, particularly as I'm thinking about parents who might be listening to this, if they have children or grandchildren, how do they help their children achieve their full potential?
I think it is about knowing what opportunities and extra resources are out there. And on the Big Island, I have to admit, because I've been starting and looking into these initiatives, I hear about a new one every week. And it wasn't so much that this hasn't been going on, it's just that we're not collectively, you know, putting these all together in a basket so that teachers can go, hey, kids, hey, parents, here are all these opportunities for you at all these different sorts of levels. We have the Pisces doing the STARS program.
What's the STARS program?
STARS program is for girls in sort of senior and junior years of high school, and that's a workshop where they go out and do everything from work up the volcano. We do some work at the observatories. They get to work with potential lunar rovers, and they get a full week of in-depth experience in all sorts of fields to give them a taste of what they might want to do as they go into a college level. It's an awesome program, and I love it. Zonta International are looking at programs for younger girls. And so what I'm trying to do now is collate all of these into one place, and so that we can sort of say, hey, look, there's all of these things and initiatives going on. You can provide some of this for your girls and boys at every single level, because you can't just walk in to a room and say, hey, girls, look at all this awesome stuff we do, and then dust your hands the next day and say, well, that's done. That's what I think is the problem. We need to support them from day one and let them support it all the way through. That's how you stop the girls falling in the cracks.
I don't know if you know Cindy Armour, who's associated with the American Association of University Women. Every year they do a program called GEMS, Girls in Engineering, Math, and Science. And that's part of it. It's only a one-day workshop, but it's around, I think, fourth grade girls, something in that age range, and to let them see the kinds of different careers that are science oriented, whether it is being a doctor or a chiropractor or an astronomer or some of the many jobs you've mentioned that are associated with that. So yeah, there are things that go on that really are focused on girls.
Yeah. And so I think we need to sort of harness those all together and advertise them better and sort of have more of a collective to show what is available out there for these girls.
What do you think, Mailani?
I attended GEMS when I was in elementary school. I was also very lucky that I went to West Hawaii Explorations Academy for a year, and that's a school that really pushes for the students to gain experience and learn through those experiences, and that's like a different form of education. So I definitely agree with everything that Jess has said, and I think that that's fundamentally what's helped me along so much.
So, Jessica, what can parents do? What can educators do to learn more and to help their girls, whether it's a granddaughter, daughter, niece, student, to understand the careers that are possible and to nurture them? Because it really takes nurturing.
It does. And so we have MaunaKeaObservatories.org, which is a collective now for all of the observatories. There is a specific section there on the outreach and educational opportunities. So that's one example. And as I said, the Pisces program on STARS, I encourage people to look at. I think a lot of the schools out there are trying to provide these. So definitely talking to the teachers about what is out there. My girls are so interested in this. How can I, you know, feed their interest? Monacare Scholars, of course, which is the ability for high school students to apply for time at the telescopes, which is now in its, I think, fourth year, and it's been incredibly successful.
Well, I know that Doug Simons, who's the executive director of Canada-France-Hawaii Telescope, said that if he had had the opportunity to actually do observing at a real observatory in high school, it would have been just an amazing miracle. He was interested in the field from the time he was a boy, but that is such an unusual opportunity.
And the quality of the applications for time from these students has blown the scientists' minds. I actually used one of the junior, as he was a junior at from Oahu, his actual request for time, I put up in front of professional astronomers to say, I don't want to see anything less than this quality of request from time for all of you, because this was done by a 16-year-old. It was that mind-blowing.
Wow.
So it is a phenomenal initiative, and so that's another really good one if they're really keen on the astronomy.
Did that particular person get telescope time?
Yes, he did. He got time on our telescope.
Good.
Mapping magnetic fields in the Orion Nebula.
You know, I want to mention also, Mailani, you had the opportunity to go to two very wonderful schools, Kamehameha Schools and Hawaii Preparatory Academy. But there's a lot of kids here on the island who are public school kids. Devin Chu, Newton Chu and Roberta Chu's son, I interviewed him for a Hawaii Public Radio story some years ago. You know, he wants to work on the mountain. He wants to be an astronomer. And there's a lot of kids like that. So it doesn't really require you to have the opportunity to go to a private school.
Yes, I definitely agree. And here on the Big Island, there's so much science going on that to me, it just seems like an automatic thought that they should be involved with the schools around here.
You know, I listened to, actually it was a story on National Public Radio, and they had interviewed a woman of Hawaiian descent who maintained that the only jobs on the mountain were those of very highly educated astronomers who had their PhDs. And I'm hearing from you two that that is not the way it is, that there's a variety of jobs. And Mailani, you are Native Hawaiian. How do you feel about having observatories on Mauna Kea? I don't expect you to advocate for the entire Hawaiian community, but tell us.
You know, I say all of this in my own opinion, and Mauna Kea is sacred and beautiful. And from my experiences working up there, I believe all the observatories and all the individuals that do work up there are very, very respectful of where they are, and they understand how incredible this mountain is across many aspects. I believe astronomy is something that my ancestors held very fascinating, and I think that's why we should continue it. It's a way to bring the Hawaiian culture to the modern day.
You mentioned that your first inspiration was at Halu'aloha School. What was your teacher's name there?
Mrs. Hale.
Mrs. Hale. That you were studying navigation. You were studying the earliest, well, they were, I call them astronomers, but the earliest voyagers who came here using the stars. And I find that to be an interesting and deep connection, because that's sort of what Emiloa Astronomy Center is about, is connecting the Hawaiians who first came here using the stars to the Hawaiians who are now continuing a study of the stars.
Yes, exactly. I mean, from my viewpoint, the native Hawaiians of the olden days, the voyagers, they stood on the shores and they looked out into the ocean and did not know what was out there. And that's what we're doing on Mauna Kea, too. We're standing on the mountain and looking out into space and seeing what we will find and where we need to go.
Jessica, you are in the business. Why do we need to continue to explore space? We've been to the moon. Just in the last few weeks, the Chinese sent yet another telescope up to the moon. There's a lot of exploration that's gone on. What more do we need to learn?
I think the really big one, and I think the one for connectivity and bouncing off what Mailani said of wondering what's out there, life. Is there life out there and where is it? Exoplanets as a field. The next thing, of course, is actually finding Earth-like planets. And the next generation of telescopes are going to be able to image these planets and look at the atmospheres around them and tell us whether there could be life and life similar to what is here on Earth on some of these planets. We are creating telescopes almost the size of the planet with JCMT and interferometry to actually, for the first time, image a black hole, we really don't still know whether they exist. And in the form Einstein told us about, that we'll be doing very much next year. These things, we're always on the edge of these new phenomenal discoveries. But for connectivity and finding out exactly what is out there, we are only a drop in the ocean. And we've got a lot more out there to find.
Bringing women into science, what more should people know about that, Jessica Dempsey?
We need to push to do this. It is not going to happen organically. Just hoping that women are just going to suddenly build up in these areas is now shown to be not true. We actually would need 110 years at the current rate to get gender equity in STEM fields like engineering and technical fields at our observatories. We actually have to work at this. And so that, for me, is the sort of message to take out there. We need to pull our girls up. We need to support and mentor them at every single stage of their education and give them that confidence. And we need to stop this attrition, even at the high and functioning levels of professional astronomy, engineering, and other technical fields.
If parents want to support their female children in this, what resources should they look to?
They should be looking at the support provided here on the island by the schools and the school programs, especially in STEM education. We've mentioned a few: GEMS, STARS, Mauna Kea Scholars, Zonta International, and give them the support and tell them they're good at math, because there is definitely only the confidence and the belief that I can do anything, and every kid should have that, and particularly here. I want to see the next generation leading the observatories and other STEM fields here on this island be locally born, bred, educated kids, and I want at least half of them to be girls.
One thing I want to say, Mailani, before I turn to you for whatever you might like to say in closing, is that I think parents giving children, as you said, Jessica, a sense of confidence is really important. I do know Mailani's parents, and I first met Mailani when she was, a toddler, and her parents always seemed to give her and her sister a whole lot of confidence and independence, just even in wandering around a tennis court unattended. And, you know, I just actually think that's a good thing when you teach your children to be independent and to think. But Mailani, what would you say in closing about this topic?
I think that for my generation, it's issues like these, like gender balance, that are the things we're going to have to overcome in order to achieve many great feats to come up. One of them is going to Mars. It definitely cannot just be done by one side, like one side of the room with males and the other side of the room with females. We all need to work together. And this goes for so many issues, not just science and astronomy, but everyday life. And so that's why I think that these issues do need to be pushed and recognized, and we need to come together to solve them.
Mailani Neal, I wish for you the best. I hope you get into the grad school of your choice, and I can't wait to see you coming back here to work and become a functioning taxpayer.
Thank you. I'm counting down the days.
And Jessica Dempsey, what would you say in closing? You know, anything, words of wisdom you'd like to impart?
I want to say never give up. And especially to the girls out there, I want to create an avenue where it wasn't as hard for the next generation of girls as it was for me. But, you know, it's going to be a bulldozer. It's going to be a bulldozer. We'll bulldoze a path together. And that way, I want every single girl who has ever thought about doing this to believe that she can. And they should give me a call if they have any questions. I want us to set up this mentoring and support network of other successful women like Mailani so that they know they're not alone.
So if folks do want to call you, Jessica Dempsey, how do they reach you at James Clerk Maxwell Telescope?
They should contact me through our observatory help desk interface, and they should feel free to do so at any time. It'll be helpdesk@eaobservatory.org.
Helpdesk@eaobservatory.org?
That's right.
What does EA stand for? It doesn't stand for JCMT.
East Asian Observatory.
Why is it called East Asian Observatory?
JCMT is now run by a conglomerate of the national astronomy organizations of Japan, China, Korea, and Taiwan.
Wow.
Yes.
But you're here on the Big Island.
We are here on the Big Island, and we are scooping up more Asian partner countries as we go.
Very good. And the email again, one more time?
helpdesk@eaobservatory.org.
Very good. Thank you so much, Jessica Dempsey, for being with us today. Aloha.
Thank you very much for having me.
Mailani Neal, thank you so much for taking the time on your break from school. Aloha.
Thank you.
And a huge thank you to our listeners. This is Island Issues, and I'm your host and producer, Sherry Bracken. And this interview has been a great reminder of how important it is to encourage our young people to study and to achieve. And it's nice to know there's plenty of resources around. I will see you next Sunday morning for another Island Issues. Until then, please, let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahui ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues, brought to you by Regency at Hualalai, a retirement and assisted living community. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us at info@labo105.com. Join us again next week for another Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Islands Mahalo Multimedia.